Hi, and welcome to the G&J Show. I'm Gerhard.
And I'm Joss. As married couples, we all want strong marriages and healthy families. But what can we do to be that couple and family we've always dreamed to be?
Our show is dedicated to helping you improve your marriage, strengthen your family, and encourage you to live your best life.
We discuss practical resources and books and have conversations with other couples to find winning strategies and methods for your marriage and family. Today we're going to explore the four temperaments again, and this time the topic is melancholic wife. And today we'll have as our guest Mary Rose Kenville, who is the wife of Adrian Kenville, who we interviewed the previous time. So originally our first podcast was called The Four Temperaments, and as a recap, the temperaments have been used to try to understand personality since the ancient Greeks. Based on the book The Temperament God Gave You, we share the basics of the temperaments and how knowing them can help you navigate relationships like a pro.
All right, let's dive in.
Thought it would be good to give a review of what the temperaments are. So the four temperaments are, again, sanguine, the fun-loving one, choleric,
the type A,
the melancholic, so the person who likes to have a schedule and maybe stereotypically the person who likes to, I don't know, dwell in dark and deep thoughts.
When you're obsessed with everything in order.
Highly orderly.
Orderly, but I mean, not necessarily obsessive compulsive. And then the phlegmatic, who loves harmony and relationships. So this theory has been around since the ancient Greeks, and it's developed into other more recent theories. For our sake, the temperaments are different from personality because temperaments are what you're born with. Personality is how you can adjust your personality. Sorry, personality is how you can work with your temperament to adapt yourself to an environment. So for example, somebody might be a choleric and prone to type A, but that person could adjust the personality in such a way that they're not always trying to control situations and so on. Speaking from experience. Now, the melancholic, Meros, maybe you can help me describe what the melancholic is.
Meros, could you describe to us what it means to be melancholic to you? How would you define the melancholic temperament? And then what do you connect with about it?
Well, I didn't really know before I refreshed myself with the book. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't even know how I'm melancholic. But I'm reading this chapter, I'm like, everything applies to me. the most melancholic person you can get, I guess. So definitely the organized part is being organized. I find that's a big part of who I am. What else?
So I've got a list here of adjectives that I pulled out, and maybe if any of them jump out to you, you could just stop me and add a little.
Oh, pessimistic. Anecdote. That's another
pessimistic.
One.
Okay. That would be pretty stereotypical of the melancholic. I have melancholic as my secondary temperament, so I understand.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Gary, do you have any melancholic?
I couldn't remember.
Nope.
So here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so the first adjective that I have here under melancholic, and this is all from the book The Temperament God Gave You by Art and Lorraine Bennett. Is attention to detail. Mm-hmm. Orderly is number two, tidy. Mm-hmm. High standards.
Yep. Correct. That's the other thing. Not only the organization, the attention to detail is a big part of my personality, but also the perfectionism. Everything needing to be perfect. Which, as I read in the book, is obviously hard in any relationship, the need for perfection.
Now, do you?
Yeah, and I imagine it's also hard because you and Adrian have five kids, and they're probably the agents of chaos, and perfection does not enter picture.
Yeah, and actually, I read something in the book that caused me, where was it? With parenting, a melancholic person needs a spirit of flexibility. And often melancholics don't have that. And so we often tend to take mistakes from our children personally, and we need patience with any childishness, because we're just like, so like everything needs to be just so. And when I tell you to do something, you need to do it now, because that's what I expect, you know, because I expect you to understand and to take it and to do it as like as perfect as possible, you know, which is obviously not a like realistic thing.
So how do you manage like that expectation with the reality that kids don't always do what you ask them to do right when you ask them to do that?
Well, you just have to recognize what you're doing and just like, you know, like realize how unrealistic you're being, I guess, in a sense, you know.
Yeah, I think it's stopping and realizing that, like, okay, the kid's only two.
Yeah.
I can't expect too much.
Maybe it's my choleric self. I do. I'm like, he's two, but he can do it.
I do have to remind myself, like, you know, like Cedric's seven. That's it. Like, you know, maybe my expectations are too much on him right now, or whatever. Like, maybe they're not, maybe they are, but like, I have to remind myself their age. they're not little adults like me. Although, I mean, it's good to maybe sometimes, you know, expect things as much, like the higher your expectations are, sometimes makes them want to, you know, go.
Be better.
Strive for it.
Yeah, strive for it. That's what I'm looking for. Thank you, Kara.
Now, how do you, in other terms of orderliness, like manage, like, for example, like having five kids, like it's going to get messy. Like, how, like, does that start to drive you crazy? Like, can you manage the mess, or like, how do you?
that's partially like something else I realized reading about this was that because I need that order and I need that perfect thing. When things don't go the way I want it to, sometimes it's really hard. It's really hard to deal with it, you know? And actually they say, what was that I was reading here? Sorry, I've got my notes. Longing for perfection and failing to achieve that may begin to, you may begin to lose self-confidence and become like despondent and depressed and everything. And it's true that, like, you know, sometimes like I'm striving for that perfection and it's not happening. I've got five kids, I've got a chaotic household, everything's going crazy. And it's like, oh, the world is falling apart. And like, nothing's gonna ever work out. And there's where that pessimism comes in, you know? It's like, oh, nothing.
How do you pull yourself out of that moment? Like, how do you move on from that feeling that like things are falling apart?
I don't know. It's hard to tell. Like, I just get up the next day and it's a brand new day and the world is better and, you know, I got more sleep and things are better. I don't know.
So do you just tell yourself in the moment, like, it's just passing, and then the next day you just start off with a fresh slate and give yourself a bit of a break, or?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I have days that it doesn't go well and days that, you know, it goes better. So yeah, I don't know. I'm not being very helpful with that, I guess.
No, but I mean, like, I imagine, like, too, like, I mean, I look at you and your expectations, and I look at me and my expectations, and I've got three kids, and I've been parenting for less long than you have, and I feel like my expectations are higher, and, like, you've learned to kind of, like, tone your expectations down a little bit.
Yeah, and I did learn to, like, give myself a break, and, you know, maybe bring down a notch, like, okay, I'm not going to get the house perfectly clean and, you know, I wake up and everything's all in its place. I'd love that one day, but that's not a real reality right now.
When you're quote unquote retired from parenting.
No, it's probably not even then, you know, so I've learned to, like, lower my expectations. So like in the morning I get up, my dishes are done. That's it. Like if the kitchen is clean, I've done my job for the day, you know, like that's as big of an expectation as I'm expecting right now. And like, just to lower your expectations like that, helps immensely, because then I haven't gone like, oh, my goal today is to have the house sparkling. Like sometimes it is, but in reality, I can't do that every day, you know? So just to have different goals instead. And then as long as I achieve those goals, then I feel like I've helped those perfectionism tendencies to go away, you know, like, because so I've achieved a goal.
here's a question. So speaking of goals, like, melancholics are also known for their schedules. Like, do you keep a schedule?
I used to try and keep a schedule. It never worked out. And I really wanted to, but it just, so I learned of a different way, where you have a schedule, but it's like, it's not by time. It's not like 9 a.m. I'm doing this, 10 a.m. I'm doing this. It's like, first I have breakfast, then I clean the house, then I do this, then I do that type thing. And like, so that helped me a lot more. So it's more, it's a schedule, but it's not like a,
it's a rhythm,
strict schedule. Yeah, exactly. Like one of those rhythm schedules, so that I have a flow to my day instead of trying to abide by a certain time, because that's not going to happen with a whole bunch of kids making things difficult and everything.
Yeah, things don't happen on time. No. I keep a schedule like that myself because I find like it's less frustrating, because I just know like, okay, well, we got through the first part of the day.
Yeah, exactly.
And now it's the next part of the day. And it's like, yeah, and the kids know too. It's like after this happens and that happens, and even Ansgar will ask me like, what's going to happen next? And he has a sense of like, I actually know what's going to happen next, which is good.
Yeah. Exactly. The kids really like that, I think. And they really like routine. So it's important to have something. And no matter how hard I tried, the time thing wasn't working.
Yeah, forget it. And on this list of adjectives from the temperament book, there's orderly, high standards, which we kind of talked about. Critical is one. How does it make you feel, that adjective?
Well, I mean, again, it's like going back to that perfectionism, right? So if I have higher expectations of myself, I feel like, because I'm a perfectionist. And so I tend to look at everyone else and say, you need higher expectations of yourselves as well.
I like that. Now, Garrett, as a sanguines are opposites of melancholics. I'm going to bring you in at this key moment. Uh-oh.
I know.
What do you have to say about that? Expectations.
Yeah, you like to impose expectations. I think as a sanguine, like, there's... I don't know, I think the expectations are just different, like they might not exist, but I don't even think that's true, because I think the sanguine is motivated more by relationships and fun and doing exciting things. So I think the self expectations come along more on those lines, rather than maybe more of a like, I need to achieve this standard or this goal. Whereas I think the sanguine is much more like, oh, I want to go to 5 parties this week. You know, like, I think it's the standards are different, or it's like, yeah. The sanguine might be more visual. So it's like, oh, I need to make sure that I look a certain way, in order to, I don't know, send off the right image or perception to the other people I interact with. So they might have more of a strict, you know,
Like outwardly focused?
Outwardly and relationship focused rather than more of an internal character focus.
Yeah, I think so.
That's a good way of describing it.
Yeah.
Adrian's sanguine too, so do you butt heads on so, that one?
For him, yeah. At the start of our marriage, I had, you know, I was like, why aren't you doing this my way? And, you know, I mean, this clean, and, you know, we worked it out eventually. It's been 10 years, but.
Yeah, I'm hoping Jocelyn will accept the fact that the floor is a great place to store laundry. Like, it hasn't worked yet. But
Never.
It's a constant battle.
It really is.
I have baskets. It's really simple. The basket is at the end of the bed, but somehow the clothes doesn't get in the basket.
Even though the basket goes right there. Yeah, it's right like a beside. Game of basketball.
Like laundry basketball. It's okay. Garrett did the laundry today, so he washed the laundry.
I didn't wash it. I just hung it.
Okay, I washed it. Hung it up. He took it down. He put it away. So
there you go.
It's okay. It's called retribution.
Well, and it's also about like learning to lower your expectations again. Like I lowered my own expectations of what I can accomplish, and I lower expectations of what I want from other people. Because I know, like, in reality, you know, if you expect less and then they go up above and beyond, then you're like, oh, this is fantastic. But if you expect more and then they end up, you know, falling short of that.
Yeah, I agree.
Right?
Yeah, if you set a bar that's unachievably high, then you're setting yourself and whoever that person is up for failure.
No matter who it is. I mean, you know, I could be talking about my husband, but I could also be talking about like family members and children and friends and, you know, anyone.
I think it's pretty cool when I was at your house a week ago there, I saw that you have like a chore contribution chart for all your kids, even your two-year-old. I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, I do try to get things organized like that, but again, it's difficult to maintain sometimes with a chaotic household. But hopefully one day it'll be...
Well, tell us a little bit about what you do with your kids to get them to contribute with the chores.
Well, because my kids are, you know, from 7 to 7 months. And because they're young, they really enjoy doing chores. So it's not a hardship to get them to do anything. They're like super excited. Like, okay, your job is to help with supper. Yay, I get to help with supper. You know, like it's not hard to get them to do that. It's just hard for me. Like I could get them to help me more around the house. You know, I know they're capable, but because of my striving for perfection, they never do a good job.
Come on. They're 7.
Like, why are you not sweeping the way I want you to sweep? Why are you not vacuuming the way I want you to vacuum? You shouldn't know how to do these things. So because of that, I tend to just like, oh, whatever, I'll just do it myself. And then but they really want to help. So I'm like, okay, fine, you can help me with supper and you can do the dishwasher and you can set the table and sweep after supper and everything.
And they I do, guess. And I'd be like, yeah, do it.
And I mean, make me a margarita while you're at it.
Yeah, exactly. I do have like different expectations. Like obviously the younger ones, I'm not going to expect them to do a good job. Like I know, okay, you're 3 years old, you're 2 years old. It's not going to be the best sweeping job in the world, but they do it anyways. It just like, I learned to like, just like, okay, it's gonna be bad. Just live with it.
I think it's awesome same that you left like
same with like decorating the Christmas tree at Christmas time. I can't even be in the same room. I'm like, Adrian is doing it with them. I'm not even gonna like criticize how they did it. Like, I'm just gonna go. They're gonna do it. They're gonna have fun. I'm gonna come back and go, oh wow, what a great job you did. Because like, I just can't stand the disorganization, the chaos, the crazy. Like, I always have it, everything just like so. And yeah, it's definitely hard. That's why it's nice to have a sanguine husband who can deal with that stuff and is not like, you know,
who doesn't have much of an orderly bone in his body to begin with, so it's like, yeah, fine, whatever.
It doesn't like, yeah, exactly. So that's good.
So I kind of connected to that. Another adjective describing the melancholic is worrywart.
No.
Somebody who like tends to worry a lot.
That goes with the pessimism as well.
Right.
And I used to be like a big worrier. I'm not as much anymore. Just because, well, in the book, they said something interesting about melancholics needing a big trust in God in order to get through all the worrying and the pessimism that becomes part of our personality. And I agree with that, because the fact that my trust has grown has helped my worry go down. And because, and I mean, I've learned to just like, there's nothing I can do, you know, like I still worry. Like, it's not like I don't worry anymore, but I've learned to just like shut that away.
Not dwell on it.
Yeah. Everything will be fine. No.
I mean, just keep swimming.
Yeah, exactly. There's not much I can do, but it's true that it is a tendency of ours to be worried.
On a more positive note, because I know a lot of these adjectives have been a bit negative, but I think they also like, they're important, right? Like, it's important to have like that kind of negative outlook sometimes on life, because it helps helps us grow, it helps us see what's missing and so on. But here's a more positive adjective: it's values truth.
Yeah, I could say that.
Analytical and
values truth and beauty, I find.
Okay.
Like beauty in the world. Like, I just recently realized that I'm always drawn to like beautiful things, and not like a beautiful woman or whatever, or like society's definition of beauty, but like a beautiful flower, like nature's beauty, or like dance or art or music, you know, like the beauty, the natural beauty that we have in this world. I think I've been really drawn to that lately. And obviously my wallpaper here
demonstrates
the color, the lines, the form of art and music. I don't know, I'm describing it badly probably, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do. because to relax, like, I know you play piano, for example, you draw, you studied interior design, so you definitely tend towards like more.
And just like, I can look at a magazine and it's like a beautiful room that's been decorated beautifully and everything's just in its place. And I'm like, oh, what a fresh breath of air looking at this well-ordered space. When I look at mine and all I see is disorganization and chaos, and I'm like, oh, that looks so nice. And it's just like a breath of fresh air, you know. And I think that's a tendency too for us, is to long for that organization around us. And you know,
okay, here's a question. How does an organ, like you just said, like when you look at the magazine, like you feel like it's like a breath of fresh air. Mm-hmm. So does like orderliness like give you a sense of peace?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. And I guess like beauty too, like I think of like classical music, for example, there's a certain peace that it gives, because the pleasure of all the sounds coming together at the right moment, and the rhythm of it, it's like high orderliness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And even like a piece of work, even if like an art piece, I mean, even if it's like an abstract thing with like just colors thrown onto a canvas, if it's colors that go together, it's still organized and it's still peaceful for me anyways, which I found interesting. Like this is something like I just discovered of myself like this year. Very new.
I think it's cool though, because I know like growing up, like you really liked listening to music, like you listen to a lot of music.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And I think the music that always drew me was the beautiful voices, like the voice itself. Like if the singer could be doing whatever for musical genre, but if the voice is like a beautiful voice and you can hear all the different like notes and nuances and whatever, then I'm like, wow, this is a great piece of music and I love it, you know.
I know, Gary, like you grew up listening to a lot of music too, and mm-hmm. Sangren. How does art and beauty, because you're attracted to it as well, like yep. How does that make you feel as a Sangren?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think like because I like fun and exciting things, and like I don't know, like I've built in rose-colored glasses that I cannot take off. For me, like having music always, I use music as a way to make the task or the moment more exciting and just like help get me in a more positive, like I'm already in a positive mood, energized. But get me in a more positive mood, energize me, get me fired up, which is why like at breakfast, I like to listen to upbeat music. If I'm doing more routine tasks, like washing the dishes or doing laundry, that I know, like, I'd rather do that and listen to music because it just makes it more exciting and more pleasurable. Mm-hmm. Or listen to a podcast. I think also, like, this might be my temperament as well. Like, I really like upbeat, energetic music. I don't have much of a stomach for for very sad or not necessarily melancholic, but I don't have.
You used to listen to like Sound and Color, remember?
Yeah, a little bit, but it was just a phase. Like I grew out of it. Whereas, like a lot of the music that I've listened to consistently over the years, like the bands, the songs, they're all like upbeat, hot, like energetic, hot, like
angry.
Well, yeah. If I'm working out and want to get after it, like, then yeah, rock or metal.
It's funny because it's the same with Adrian. He has the same type of like high energy, like some like German metal band, and you know, like all this weird stuff. Sometimes, I mean, but I do like some of his music, like the
electro dance. I remember he listens to electro dance.
Yeah, like that sort of thing. Like I like that music too, but for different reasons. Because of the voices, basically, because they have beautiful singers that are singing with them, and then it's got like a good beat to go with it. So I don't mind that, but like the screaming is not for me.
Yeah, me too. Can't take like the heavy metal stuff. Like it's like,
but who knows? Maybe people find that pleasurable, and they're still melancholic people. Like I don't know. Like I think music is something that you know. We're influenced from an early age of different mm-hmm. things, depending on what our parents listen to as well. So some music that we find comforting could be like for someone else, like what is this stuff? You
know? Yeah. And I think temperament has a large part to play, because I know some of my siblings will listen to their music and I'm like, after two songs, like I got to get out of here. Like this, it just grinds my gears the wrong way. But,
we all have different preferences, I guess.
Yep. So it sounds like over the years that you've, whether consciously or not, been able to modify or mold your temperament, like to kind of pull down the parts that are, let's say, not helping you live your full life and like lean into more the strengths of your temperament, what would be
like being a melancholic, apparently we're very self like retrospective, like we're always like analyzing this, analyzing that. What did I do wrong today? What did I do right today? And so I think naturally over the years, I've just been like, sort of like, this isn't working. I'm going to improve it this way and see if this works instead. And I find myself having that tendency to my children as well. Like, okay, what I'm doing is not working. So how can I help them, you know, by doing something else or whatever, you know, like I'm like trying to figure them out like a puzzle. And I do enjoy puzzles. But like my whole life is a puzzle. Like, okay, how can I always improve myself and make things more organized? More organization. And the funny thing is as well is that not only do we like organizing, we're big planners, and I'm constantly planning like, oh, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that. But the follow through doesn't always happen. And so that's also a big tendency of mine to like constantly like, not necessarily dream. I wouldn't call it dreaming, but like, just like for example, I want to organize my recipe books and just like get out all the recipes out of my books that I use. And then that way, you know, I can just like open up an app or whatever and go, okay, I'm going to do this recipe tonight and blah, blah, blah. But I also want to organize my clothes. So I've been doing sort of the same thing with that, trying to organize my outfits and stuff like that. And because I love organizing. So I'm just organizing my whole life, and I'm organizing the boys' toys and like,
like, how do you sort your Lego?
I sort it by pieces. So I've got like the squares and the 4x2s, the 4x4s, and you know, like all the, I've got it all in different pieces. And so funny because the boys, they have no trouble with that. They're like, okay, where's this piece, Mom? I'm like, it's with the sixes. And then they're like, they know exactly where to look, you know, with the special pieces, okay, and then they look there. But because I plan all these things, sometimes it takes me a really long time to actually do it, you know? So I have all these plans, and I'm gonna organize all these things, and I even start it, I'm all excited, and then it just like fizzles out, and I'm like, oh, I've got to organize this instead, and then I go to that thing, and so it's like the planning that I like more than the actual doing of it, I think. I don't know.
I guess like I, as a sort of secondary thought, like what satisfaction does it give you to organize so much of your life?
Just the orderliness, I guess.
Like what kind of feeling does it give you?
Like when a room is organized, it just gives me a sense like that of space almost. Like I've got so much space to deal with. I can sit back, I can relax. I don't feel squeezed into a box and like I have to go around this toy and around this table and over this blanket or whatever. I don't know, like it's hard to describe, but
no, I like, totally get what you mean, because like when I walk into, for example, a hotel room, you walk into a hotel room, there's the white sheets on the bed, and then there's the desk and it doesn't have anything on it, and then there's the window and there's nothing on it either, you know, like, and there's like the pure minimalism of walking into that room makes it beautiful to me, and like that for me is like my ideal. Like when I walk into a room, I love to have like clean surfaces,
very little everything thing in its place. It doesn't mean that I don't have, like, I don't necessarily mean to get rid of all my stuff, because some people drastically, like, minimalize their stuff. So there's, like, one couch.
That's Jocelyn, 100%.
Like, get rid of it all. Get it all out of my house.
I mean, I do.
I only like, have one pair of underwear because of
But at the same time, like, if everything has its place, like, if I have a spot for that, I don't mind keeping it. But the fact that it's just like out on the counter because there's nowhere to put it, or out on the floor because no one knows where it goes, that to me is worse than getting rid of everything, you know?
I kind of know what you mean too. Like when you sit down in a room that's clean, like say I'm imagining that hotel room, but even like within my own home, and I'm sitting down in the living room after the boys are in bed, all the toys are put away. I can still see the toys, but at least like they're put away, they look okay. And I feel like I can relax, you know, like I feel yeah. calm, I can relax. If the toys are all over the ground and like Gary and I are going to start watching a movie, like I can't relax. I have to go and pick up all the toys, put them all away before I can like, okay, whew, like end of the day, let me relax now.
Yeah.
And then I go and put laundry on the floor.
it's annoying. Because the reason why the laundry on the floor bothers me is that like, I like walking into a room that's clean. And, like I walk into a room, the laundry's on the floor. And it's like, oh, work. And like, that's the first thing that comes into my head. It's like, it's ugly as well. Like it's unaesthetic.
Yeah, exactly. It's not beautiful. And Adrian has a tendency to put papers and laundry on the floor. And like, his idea of cleaning up for people when they come over is to put all his papers from the dining room into the bedroom in a big pile and a mess on the floor. And it's like, that's not cleaning up. That's just moving one mess to another room. Or like cleaning up the basement is, you know, and just like moving things around till it looks nice. And I'm like, well, if you got rid of some of that stuff, then maybe it would look even nicer. Yeah. But, you know, so... Yeah, it's like I said, you learn to live with it, I guess.
I have a couple more, just a really quick question. How about like we didn't talk about the low energy side of melancholic, like the cautious.
Yeah.
I think that's like one complaint against melancholics, by especially sanguines, is they're kind of like a little bit of a downer. How do you play something like that?
I agree that we're very cautious people, but that's only because we're so unsure. And like Adrian's always, you know, let's do this, let's do that, and he's got a whole bunch of dreams of his farm and his life and whatever. And it's like, are you sure that's gonna work out? Are you sure? Like, because we have a tendency to worry, and so it's not that I don't want to do it. I need reassurance that everything will work out before I go through with it, you know?
That's fair.
So I don't know. I don't think there's any way of going around the cautiousness.
I think it's important in some ways. I think of, like one lady who I know, she's melancholic and her husband is sanguine as well. And he decided to leave his job and start this very kind of risky venture. Mm. And she had a lot of hesitations, but she kept them to herself. And then the risky ventures went south, and then their family was kind of left, you know, picking up the pieces. Anyway, and then she felt badly because then she was thinking like, well, what if I had said something earlier, you know? And so I think like in some ways, like, even though we can sound like melancholic, the melancholic side of me and the melancholic side of you can feel like a downer sometimes, like these big, like dreamy plans. I think it's important to throw a little bit of reality in there sometimes with it. Did you think about this? Because we are like detail oriented people, and like sometimes,
yeah, exactly,
the big dreamers sometimes forget like the little details of the reality of what that might actually feel like.
Like, you know, Adrian is sanguine, so he has a tendency to want to do everything, and like my melancholic tendencies pull him back a little bit and say, well, you know, you can't do everything. You can do some stuff, important things. Focus on those things. So I think we balance each other out a little bit like that, I guess. But the low energy thing, though, that took me by surprise, because I mean, I don't feel like I'm more low energy than anyone else, but maybe I just haven't realized it.
Well, and also like the like these descriptions in the book are generalities, so some things will stick, some things won't. So
you're almost perfectly melancholic, Meryl. Almost perfectly.
Almost.
You always have to live at that 89% or 99%.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, we've come up to the end of our time. That was a great discussion.
Yeah, I have one last question before we...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I've got one last question before we do the final wrap up. In what ways have you seen your, like, being a melancholic help you in your, like, in your marriage and in your family? Because I think one of the, like, you know, if for anyone who's, like, started to read the book, you read through the different temperaments and you're like, ooh, I like, you know, this one sounds good, that one sounds good. And then you hit the melancholic one and you're like, oh, man, that, like, that sounds like you got the short end of the stick. So how maybe it's just the sanguine reading and be like, oh,
that sounds so boring.
But like, in what ways have you seen like your temperament like really help you thrive and grow in being a wife and being a mother?
I think that orderliness and tidiness, you know, aspect is always good as a housewife. You know, you always want your place as organized as possible, I think. I think that's a big plus. But maybe also the constantly analyzing myself and trying to improve myself and my family. I think, I'm pushing everyone to be the best version of themselves, perhaps. I don't know. I'd like to think so.
Yeah, me too. I think that sounds nice.
Aiming for that perfection.
Yeah. I guess it draws us to something. I think like changing the expectation from like, I think something like Jordan Peterson would say, like, focusing on the outcome, mm-hmm. focusing more on the process maybe than the outcome helps us to kind of tone things down. In any case, thanks again, Meros, and thanks for your thoughtfulness in this podcast. Thanks also, Gair, for acting as a foil to the melancholic personality. So anyway, that's it for the Melancholic Wife.
Thanks for joining us for this episode on The Melancholic Wife.
We hope that you've picked up some practical tips that can help you in your marriage and your family. If you have any comments or questions for us, you can reach us at thegnjshow.com.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, please rate and review us on the podcast app you're using to listen to us right now. This will help us to reach new audiences.
Once again, I'm Gerhard.
And I'm Joss, and you're listening to The G&J Show.
Until next time, keep smiling.